my people. The night is beautiful, so the faces of my people. The stars are beautiful, so the eyes of my people. Beautiful also is the sun. Beautiful also are the souls of my people. Profile. One of the iconic American cultural figures, not only in the NBA, but in all of America. This is a man who has played 16 years of the NBA, and he was awarded the NBA MVP. The most valuable player was 1993, and 11-time All-Star, 5-time All-NBA first team, NBA rebounding leader in 87, and selected as a member of the NBA's 50th anniversary all-time team. He was a member of the Dream Team in Barcelona, not only winning the gold in 92, but winning it again on America's team in 96. A twice gold medalist and inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame in 2006. Not only that time as an individual, but once again with the Dream Team, in 2011, inducted into the Hall of Fame. He's now famous for bringing us all the NBA action on Inside the NBA. We welcome the Round Mound of Rebound. I know you must hate that nickname. And one of the greatest players ever to play the game of basketball, the great Sir Charles Barkley. Welcome, Charles.
I've had a good run. Hey, I've had a good run.
You had a great run, man. You had a great run.
You know, I've been so lucky and blessed, man, being a little kid from a small town in Alabama. Sometimes I have to pinch myself. I've been so lucky.
I hear you. So how was it growing up in Leeds, Alabama?
My mother was a maid. My grandmother worked in a meat packing factory. I had three brothers at the time. Two of my brothers have passed away. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we lived in the projects. And, you know, my mom and grandmother, two of the greatest women who ever lived. You know, we didn't know we were poor. They made it work somehow.
Right. And, you know, there's a poem by Nikki Giovanni that says, that talks about, I hope people never say that I was poor because I was rich in love. I always knew I was rich in love.
That's 100% correct. And you know, Wanda, I don't know exactly how you grew up, but like everybody else around you, nobody has a lot of stuff. So you don't realize until you get money later in life, you don't realize like, oh man, we didn't have anything. Right. But my mother, grandmother, you know, I remember the first time I made the basketball team. And they got it together and got me a pair of shoes because they had to last me the whole season, though.
Right.
And my mom would come in the locker room after the game and get them because that one pair had to last me the whole season.
Whole season, and you're not gonna play on the playground with these.
No,
you're not gonna play in the backyard. These are just for the game.
Just for the game. And then once the season was over, she gave them. I could run them in the ground, but that one pair had to last the whole season.
Now, where is Leeds compared to the
city? It's about probably 25 minutes outside of Birmingham.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
A little southern town, one street light.
Right.
But you know what? I actually tell people, I think it's great where I grew up because I didn't have to worry about stuff. You see now, you see how things are in these big cities.
Mm-hmm.
You see a lot of gang violence and murders and things like that. We didn't have those in Leeds. We had one school. So the person you started the first grade with, you saw them K through 12.
Right.
I mean,
did you play? I played bitty basketball. We called it little league. Our little league basketball was bitty basketball. Did you play little league?
Well, you know, I wasn't good enough to play. I had to play at the rec center where you had to pay to play.
Mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of people found out about me late because I grew from 5'10 to 6'5 in 1 year.
Wow.
Yeah. So because that was like the thing, like, because I never had.
What year was that?
This is my senior year.
Senior year.
Yeah, that's why people said, because I had never gotten a scholarship letter from just from anywhere other than little small schools in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And most people didn't think I could play Division One, so I came out of nowhere. And like I said, none of the big schools recruited me because of my late growth spurt.
Mm-hmm.
But the best thing that ever happened to me was being a backup chubby point guard, because the ability to dribble was the greatest thing for me. You know, because, you know, big guys can't move.
Right.
So being a point guard my whole life, when I grew from 5'10 to 6'5 and a half, you know, obviously everybody had made up their decision who they wanted. So I started getting really three colleges, Alabama, Auburn, and UAB. I didn't get any of the big schools, but I was probably going to stay close to my mother and grandmother anyway.
Uh-huh.
But, man, I was so lucky because I had to make a decision. And obviously this time, I don't have great confidence in my ability. So I went to the school that had the worst basketball team because I wanted to get to play.
Right, right. You want to make sure that when you got there, you were going to be starting.
Yeah, I tell kids that all the time. I said, listen, you can get an education anywhere where you want one. But if you go to college and don't get to play, it's going to suck for you. That's going to be the first time you're away from home. And mm-hmm. if you don't get to play, it's going to be a miserable experience.
Right. You grew from 5'10 to 6'5 in 1 year. Did that hurt? thinking, like, did your knees hurt? Did your elbows hurt? Your back? What?
You know, I've been asked that question. And honestly, what you know, I never felt, you know, I don't know if it happened gradually, to be honest with you. I leave school 1 year as 5'10 backup point guard and come back the next year as 6'5 and a half. And, you know, I don't know.
Over the summer. Literally, yeah. Over the summer?
Oh, yeah.
And so.
And it was crazy because people started asking me, how tall are you? And I'm like, 5'11. They're like, no, man, you're taller than that.
Wow.
And, hey, and the rest is history.
So you didn't even notice it.
I thought I might have grown a little bit, but I didn't realize how much I'd grown. You know how it is in the South in the summer. You get those free lunches, and the rest of you get those free lunch, and you playing basketball every day.
Right.
So you're really not, you know.
You're conscious of you just playing and get tired.
Just playing. Because, right. Like I say, my mom was a maid, and my grandmother worked at the meat factory. So, like, all we had to do every day was just play sports.
Right.
And that kept us occupied till they got home.
So now you're playing at Auburn. You played for 3 years. We're the same age. I remember watching you. I guess I didn't watch a lot of college basketball then, but, you know, I was aware of you. And you played for 3 years and then drafted to Philadelphia.
Yes.
That seems to be unheard of today. 3 years in college. If you had to do it all over again, or if it was the NCAA today, would you have been one and done, gone early?
No, because I think one and done has really hurt the NBA. Obviously, it's hurt college, but it's really hurt the NBA, because if you look at, just take a list of the greatest players ever.
Mm-hmm.
Other than Kobe and LeBron, those really the only two guys that were great enough to go right out. And Kobe struggled. Actually, in fairness, LeBron is the only player I've ever seen who was ready for the NBA to a certain degree. Kobe struggled. People forget that. He struggled early. Mm-hmm. Kevin Garnett, all those guys struggled early. And I think if you look at myself and Michael, Hakeem Olajuwon, we all stayed 3 years. We came together. Larry Bird stayed in college for 4 years. Magic stayed for two.
Right. You know,
Tim Duncan, the greatest power forward ever, stayed for four. I think it would really help a lot of these kids today if they stayed in college more than 1 year.
What do you think about the NCAA right now? Well, what do you think about the NCAA?
Well, I think it's they need to make some changes. Mm-hmm. See, you know, I'm caught between a rock and a hard place, Wendell, because I do not like when people tell black kids getting a free education is not a big deal. It drives me crazy. Right. Like, I don't think the NCAA is close to being perfect, but they only tell black kids getting a free education ain't nothing. Mm-hmm. They never tell white kids, like, hey, you're just getting a free education. I'm like, no, man, everybody wants a free education, especially how expensive it is now.
Right.
I don't think the NCAA is perfect. They got to keep doing stuff for these kids. But I always have a hard time. No wonder, you know a bunch of people. How many of them are still paying back college loans?
Right.
Yeah. Right. Some people, some of my best friends in the world today are still telling me, man, I've been paying college loans forever. And I'm like, right. Wow, that's hard for me to fathom. So the NCAA is not perfect, but I don't want people telling young black kids, because you got to understand something. We only talking about less than 1% of these guys who are going to go on and play pro sports in any sport,
right.
Less than 1%. And it's like we always trying to change everything for the 1% instead of the other 99%.
Yeah, across the board. Now tell me this though, Charles. Tell me this. What do you think about the money generated?
There's a lot of money generated, but the only problem with that is there's only two sports that generate money, basketball and football.
Right.
And see, they pay for all the other sports. So if we start giving that money to whoever, mm-hmm. I think we're going to kill all the other sports. And I would hate to see that happen, because there's just this misconception that all these colleges are making money, and they're not.
Right. Right, it's just the big ones who are bringing in $100 million in
there. Yeah, so what I think going to happen, and I would hate to see it. I think, especially coming out this pandemic, I think a lot of these schools going to kill football. I really do, mm-hmm. because it costs so much to run a football program. And listen, it's only a couple of them are really, really prominent brands. What are their brands?
Right.
I think coming out of this pandemic, we're all struggling financially. You know, I feel so bad, number one, for people who have died through this COVID thing. Yes. But, man, there's so many businesses that have been ruined and are never going to open again.
Right.
There's so many people who have lost their job. They're never going to get those jobs again. And the thing that's crazy, we're still in the middle of this thing.
Yeah.
I mean, we thought we'd be close to the end, but I don't even think we're even close to the end. We're definitely not close to a vaccine.
I know. You know, the thing I was telling people at the beginning of the year, I said, listen, we got to prepare for these 3 months. And they were like, 3 months?
Yeah.
Then a couple of weeks later, I said, man, I think this is going through the summer. Through the summer? No. And then I was like, okay, this is 2020. And now it's like we have to start thinking about how we're going to possibly live with this. You know,
the rest of our life.
Yeah.
I'm concerned because now, you know, I've been watching TV intently the last couple of days, because now you're trying to figure out if they're going to play football or not for colleges.
Right.
And if they don't play college football, that's going to ruin all. Like, I'll give you an example. My alma mater, Auburn. We have 100,000 people down there 8 weekends a year. And probably have another 10,000 who come down just to party and have fun.
Right.
We're a small town. I think that revenue, those 8 weeks we in Auburn for football, people start coming in on Wednesday.
Right.
Yeah. They come in on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, all day Saturday and Sunday, and then go home.
That's the town.
Yeah, that's all they got. You know, I wonder how long, especially, you know, the school and the business have been closed for 4 or 5 months. I just really concerned about the economic future down there, how people, if they don't have football. So I've been watching intently, but like I said, I don't even know if it's safe.
Yeah, we're going to find out in the next couple of days. Oh, actually, yeah. I mean, we're going to find out whether or not these seasons are going to happen, and it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah,
it's interesting. You are a basketball man, but being from Alabama, football is big.
Hey, man, let me tell you something. Wonder, you got no idea how much football means. So we don't have any other pro teams in Alabama.
That's right.
So it's either Alabama or Auburn from the day you old enough to, like, you got to pick a team.
You got to pick a side, right?
Yeah. And the people live and die with it.
Right.
Like, because they don't care about any pro sports. I think in my 57 years, we've had probably 10 to 15 lower level pro teams.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody gets excited for once for the, like the inaugural.
Like one season.
Yeah, for the one season. And then they're gone. We've had three or four XFL, USFL teams.
Right.
We've had a couple hockey teams. I mean, but they only care about Alabama and Auburn football.
Oh, man. That's one of the greatest rivalries in the world. Oh. I'll never forget the thing that always comes to mind is that one guy in Auburn. They had the famous trees.
Yeah, Harvey Elbright. He just died. He just died last week.
Oh, really? Last week?
Yeah, he just died last week.
And that guy went and poisoned the trees.
Because he was mad because he said that Auburn paid Cam Newton. That's like, man. Are you serious?
And like they can't even grow a tree there. I mean, he poisoned the ground in the center of the town so much so that you can't even grow anything there again.
And let me tell you something. That area was so – like every time Auburn won a football game, they went out there and rolled the trees with toilet paper. And it'd be 30,000 right. people out there just going crazy. So it was like they had been doing it for like 75 years.
Yeah.
And
he actually went to jail, crazy. Didn't he?
Oh, he went to jail, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so that shows you, man, that you are entrenched in Alabama. You love you love what is your home. No matter where you live, you always that's your hometown. So now you are drafted into the NBA. You're drafted into Philadelphia. And the thing that I remember is the fact that you were playing with Dr. J, Maurice Cheeks, and Moses Malone.
Yeah.
I mean, like
– It was amazing. Andrew Toney was there. And let me tell you something, Wendell, the best thing – see, I think, you know, we were talking about earlier about these young kids. One of the problems we got in the NBA today is all these young kids are all on these teams together doing stupid young stuff.
Right, right.
I wish all these guys would have a old vet. Like Dr. J taught me how to dress. You're like, son, this is professional basketball. We wear suits around here. We don't wear warm-ups everywhere. And I had to learn to do that. Like, no, right. We're pros. This is professional. I mean, but the most important person to me in my life, basketball-wise, was Moses Malone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wasn't getting to play my first few months. And me and Moses happened to live in the same building. And I said, Big Mo, can I come talk to you later? He said, sure, big fella. So I go up to the penthouse that night, and I sit him down, and I said, man, why am I not getting to play? And he said to me, you're fat and you're lazy. And I say, what? He says, Charles, you're fat and you're lazy. He says, you can't play basketball at 300 pounds in the NBA. You can get away with that in college. Because in college, I played between 290 and 300 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was having a lot of success. I led the league in rebounding every year I was there. But, you know, that's just strictly on talent. Right. And once you get to the NBA, you can't survive on talent in the NBA because everybody's talented. And this guy who I call Dad met with me every morning and every night and said, hey, let's lose 10 pounds. I get to 290, 280, 270. Now I'm starting to get to play. Mm-hmm. Gets me to 260, gets me to 250, and the rest is history. I call him Dad to the day. And one of the worst bittersweet days of my life was when I got to do the eulogy at his funeral and tell everybody what he meant to me.
Right.
I mean, this guy who was already one of the greats of all time took the time to work with a little fat kid from Alabama and make him lose 50 pounds. You know, mm-hmm. And it's so funny. We were talking about Zion the other night.
Yeah, our hometown guy.
Yeah, and I said, man, we need he needs a Moses Malone. And I said this on the air. I says, you know, I didn't think I could lose 50 pounds when I started. He says, let's lose 10 pounds, see how it's going. And I'm like, before I knew it, I had lost 50 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope Zion get with somebody because clearly he got to – because if he's too young to be hurt all the time.
Right.
And clearly he's not in great shape. But most 18-year-olds are not in great shape.
Mm-hmm. They just take it for granted. Wake up.
Yeah, and I just hope they put – I mean, and you know, the thing is, you can get away being overweight and out of shape in high school and college, you're only playing 30 games.
Right.
When you and you can't do it when you're playing 100 games a year in the NBA. You play 82 regular season games, another 8 during the preseason, and if you make the playoffs, they could actually could play another whole half a season. But he, I hope he gets with the right people, because he seems like a great kid, and he got some lot of talent, man. He got a lot of talent.
So let me ask you this, to be brutally frank and honest. Did you say that knowing that you said it publicly on the air? You're saying it publicly now on a New Orleans radio station. You're hoping that he hears it? Did you say that?
I'm definitely hoping he hears it. Mm-hmm. And I hope, you know, when a lot of these young guys think you'd be hating on them, I says, if Moses had to try to help me, if I was like one of these guys today, when somebody says something about him, get all defensive and everything, instead of listening to the message,
mm-hmm.
you know, I hope he listens to the message. Because if I had been a hard head and not listened to Moses, you wouldn't be interviewing me. You'd be a 300-pound guy working at McDonald's saying, "Can I help you, please?" You know, because like I say, you know, I've been around a long time. I've seen 10 to 15 guys eat their way out of the NBA.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that he listens to me and says, "Yo, man, it's just old dude trying to help me." Right. And that's what I got from Moses, Maurice Cheeks, and Andrew Toney.
Yeah.
And Dr. J. They were trying to help me. They weren't trying to hate on me. You know, we didn't even have that word back when we were old. Like when somebody older says something to you, you took it as like, oh, they're trying to help me. Uh-huh. And somewhere along the way, these young people made, every time somebody old said to them, you hating on me.
Right.
You know,
he said, "No, I'm giving you advice."
Yeah, okay, yeah, giving you advice. Somewhere in translation, it's turned into like, because you know, growing up in the neighborhood, if you did something crazy, you got your ass whooped by the neighbor,
mm-hmm.
then you got beat down when you got home.
Right, because the phone call was made.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Now today, these kids are like, "Hey, I'm not even gonna say the thing to these kids. I don't know what they gonna do or what they got going on."
Right.
And it's unfortunate too, because growing up in my hometown, man, I really think all the neighbors really wanted us kids to do well and be successful. They were trying mm-hmm. to help us.
Right. So, you know, you had, while we're there, your basketball career is so great. But what I like about this show, we get to know people, you know, and hear things from people like you, iconic figures that we never hear about like that. So I remember you speaking about community and family and everything, and you were thinking about going into politics.
Yeah, I was. I toyed with the idea, but then I realized that those people are awful. Republicans and the Democrats are both full of
mm-hmm.
You know, and I think we as black people got to stop waiting on the political system to take care of us.
Mm-hmm. We exercise the right of self-determination.
Yeah, you can vote. You can vote, and I think that's important. But you can't allow the government, whoever's in office, to think they're going to make your life better. You got to make your life better.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, you think about it. I look at the great John Lewis, who just passed away. And, you know, they've been replaying his iconic speeches. And,
mm-hmm.
and you know, that's 50 years ago, and some of that stuff's still happening.
Right.
So
right. The Voting Rights Act is actually eviscerated just a couple of years ago.
Yes, voter suppression and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, stuff is still going on all those years later. So I think we as black people got to, number one, do a better job of banding together. But mm-hmm. also, we got to realize that, hey, man, there's a system in place that's not for everybody.
Right.
You know, you can throw the term around systematic racism. Everybody knows about it and heard about it before, but it's not just that simple. It's just the system was set up and, you know, it didn't have us in mind.
Right. So do you believe, we believe in black excellence here at WBOK. And one of the reasons I bought this station with three other black men, I believe in creating an economic engine in our community to make sure that a rising tide floats all boats. Do you think we do that in pockets of America, you know, in black communities around the country, we need to do that on a larger scale?
No question. On a way larger scale.
Right. I've taken up almost all of your day. Before we go, two questions. What is your greatest fear and what is your greatest desire?
My greatest fear is probably not bringing as many people along on this journey with me as possible. You know, when the most, we're brainwashed to think like, hey, I want a big house, big car, make a lot of money. Well, one thing about sports, you get that when you're like 22 years old.
Right.
And you have to be like, nah, man, there's got to be more to life than this. I mean, first of all that stuff is great, but you got to realize, you got to always look at the bigger picture. I got to help as many people as possible. That's my biggest fear, just having like wasted life. Like, man. You know, man, everybody want money and houses and cars, but you got to do more than that.
Man. And your greatest desire?
I want to see, you know, I think that being a black person, we got to stop being so emotional and like we worry about tearing down statues and things like that. I want to see like prison reform, education reform. Mm-hmm. I want to see stuff like that. Right. If you want those statues torn down, I got no problem with that. But like, we got to stop falling for symbolic stuff.
Right.
Yeah. We need, like, no, man, we got to get some of these, you know, it's so
let's make
fun
real out. Change and just real change. Making noise.
You know,
let's
so
make
funny.
Change instead of yeah. making noise.
Yeah. I was in Lake Tahoe playing golf a couple of weeks ago. And I was walking down the street, just taking a walk. I like to take a walk sometime. And I walked by a pot store. And I said, think about this is one of the reasons we need prison reform. Think about all the black men and the brown men we have put in prison.
Right.
For long periods of time. And the worst thing we did, because once you get arrested, you're in the system.
Right. And it's always going to be haunting you.
So always going to be there. And now you can walk down the street and buy a joint and walk around smoking it, like in most states now.
Right.
And I'm saying, no, we need education and prison reform for real. Not bogus stuff, like real stuff.
Yeah. Charles, thank you so much for coming on today. I think you're great, man. You're a funny guy, man. You're a very intelligent man. And you're just one of the warmest people I know. One of the kindest people I know. And I always look, whenever I'm with you, I kind of look around. I'm just like, he's hanging out with me. So I thank you, man. I thank you so much.
You're welcome, my brother. Hey, listen, I want to meet your boy Ro too. Let me know when I can come back on.
Definitely.
All right,
thank you
so
much.
Yourself, Aaron.
Appreciate it. You too.
All right.